What makes us different? You. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
Hi, everybody. Helping yourself to know how is why you're here with Dr. Greer, and you're listening to the Doctor on Call Hour at HealthyLife.net. Well, it's hot. It's happening. Actually, it's warm here in New York, but it is hot. It is happening. It is sizzling, and that is because it's Let's Talk Sex time. Welcome to the show, everybody. It is a great one with author Eric Rogel. And later in the show, we're going to go behind closed doors with Rebecca Rosenblatt, a.k.a. Dr. Date. Joining me now is my first guest, Eric Rogel. Eric is the author of the best-selling relationship guide, The Art of War for Dating. And he's been writing for major publications about men's issues and lifestyle for more than 10 years. He currently teaches men how to live in what he calls the right order masculine, which gives them the tools to be better men, husbands, and fathers. He's working on a documentary series that explores how ancient and modern cultures have prepared young boys to become men. And thank you for joining us. This is something we really need to be talking about, particularly in our culture right now, right?
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. But yeah, it's a very, very important issue right now. A lot of people are talking about it.
Yeah, and it's a pleasure because it seems that, you know, culturally what's going on across the country and even around the world, the movement has picked up, the Me Too movement, that the notion of being masculine and being a man has gotten very blurred with being sexually aggressive and always being, you know, somewhat predatory with women. So talk to us about what you mean by the right order masculine. Because boy, we need some of that, and fast. Can we dial that up?
Well, the good thing is it does happen fast. It is very quick. So the first thing that I'll say is when I talk about right order masculine, when I talk about masculine and feminine, what I mean is the masculine and feminine energies that we all have in each of us. So it's not about men and women. It's not about male or female. I have masculine and feminine in me, you have masculine and feminine in you, and the right order masculine, especially for men, is about leading with their ideal or empowering masculine and supporting with their ideal or empowering feminine.
Mm.
So right order masculine is leading with empowered masculine, supporting with empowered feminine.
So that's it
in a nutshell.
Okay, but let's crack that nut open and just talk about that, the empowered right masculine vis-a-vis the empowered right femininity. What does that look like? Like, what would that be? What would constitute that?
Absolutely. So I'm going to give you some words, and as I say the words, kind of feel into them and see how they feel to you. That's really where we kind of get these. But some of the ideal masculine characteristics, and again, this can be for both men and women. We both have these. But I would say things like being a leader, being commanding, powerful, courageous, dynamic, decisive is a really big one. We can talk about that one a little more later. A guardian, a protector, a committed, ambitious. These are all real positive, ideal masculine characteristics that we should all follow.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. And the feminine ones?
Yeah, absolutely. Feminine ones are wonderful. And these are things like being devoted, nurturing, inspiring, allowing, nourishing, loving, compassionate, creative, patient, trusting. You know, all of those things together, leading with those empowered masculine I just gave you and following with these are really what I think what a lot of the men that we're seeing right now and a lot of the issues that we're having need to be following. Because the limiting ones are the ones where they are in right now.
Right. So what would an interaction look like if we have a man and a woman together and a man is being his right masculine order self, so to speak? If they're having an issue or they're having a conversation, like what would that look like in terms of his accessing those traits and qualities to be both a leader and strong and yet make room for the best of his partner, female partner, be she inspiring or nurturing? How does that interactionally work?
Okay, well, the best example that I have and the one that really seems to hit home with most of the married women that I get to is we'll just use the masculine ideal of decisive. Okay, so decisive is a really strong masculine ideal, being decisive. And it's the one that I find causes the most issues in a lot of relationships because the man in the relationship will defer decisions to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
oh, honey, wherever you want to go for dinner is fine with me. Or whatever movie you want to see is okay. Or wherever you want to go shopping is fine. And what we're doing as men is we think we're being agreeable. We think we're being, nice to our wife and letting her decide.
Mm-hmm.
But really all we're doing is we're forcing the woman in the relationship to step into her masculine and make the decisions.
Mm-hmm. That's a great example.
At the same time, right. So she now has to step into her masculine and sees the man as indecisive, weak. Those are things that are masculine limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So she doesn't see him as a strong man. So if the man steps up and says, honey, look, this is what I'd like to do for dinner tonight. This is where I think we should go. We'll go here. We'll do this. We'll do that. And then after, when he's following with the empowered feminine, things like being loving, compassionate, creative, fun, playful, all those wonderful things that go along with it. But he showed up first in that masculine. And that's where that attraction occurs with women. That's the one that I find when I speak to women. They're like, oh my God, I didn't realize it. My husband has been doing this for years. He pushes off all decisions onto me, and I resent it. I hate it. I just want him to make a decision already.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're waiting for that masculine to step up.
Mm-hmm. And, it's so interesting because a lot of times when you think of women, yes, you think of decisive, but I hear the men complaining a lot. You know, you can't make up your mind. You're so indecisive. You don't know what you're going to. You don't know what you're going to wear. You don't know where you want to go.
Right.
And so it is interesting because decisiveness, although it may present as a masculine trait, is something that's challenging for both male and female.
Correct. Very, very much so. And, this is where, like I always say at the beginning, we can't think of this in terms of men and women because we all have this. This is universal. And this is what I try to make people understand. And getting back to what you said at the top of the show where you said, this masculinity is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's toxic. That's the thing I'm hearing a lot of now, toxic masculinity. Masculinity is toxic. Well, to me, it's like anything else. It's only toxic or bad in what we put on it. So if men are showing up in the limiting, in the bad masculine traits, and those are things like, bullying, controlling, violent, abusive, overpowering, perverted, and those are the things we're seeing now, right, with a lot of these men that are getting caught up in all these issues. The tendency is to say, well, then all masculine is bad. You shouldn't be masculine.
Mm-hmm.
Where my feeling is, yeah, we all have that, but we need to move it into the ideal masculine, the positive masculine. That's the solution here.
That makes so much sense. What drove you into, how did you get into this whole concept and this understanding of male-female relationships, first off? And then secondly, how does this all play out in the sexual arena and sexual intimacy between men and women?
Oh, yeah, that's a big one. So, yeah, first how I got into it was...
Yeah.
I've been working and doing, relationship stuff for a long time. I interviewed a lot of men, a lot of women, and started seeing how the interactions were. And what I found is that when women say, oh, I want a man who's sensitive, men were taking that as, well, she wants a man who's like, very docile and caring and attentive and all the attention's on her. And then I found women were getting angry at this or frustrated with this. Because what they were really saying was, I want a man who is sensitive, not a sensitive man. And it wasn't the right, they weren't leading with that masculine. They were showing up in their feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really attractive to women. I think you did a piece that I read that was about, well, women wanted bad boys with a good heart.
Yes, right.
That's exactly what this is. Because if you look at the masculine ideal, maverick, bold, dynamic, decisive, unapologetic is a big one, where men own their stuff and don't feel the need to constantly apologize for it, but then have that good heart, which is that empowered sense. And so I started looking at things like that, saying, well, the women that were in really good relationships, the men that were really attracting a lot of women had very strong masculine ideals and a masculine presence first. And then we're showing with the feminine.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking into that more and more, and then I got into training with a mentor of mine, a man named Rob James, who has a group that's phenomenal called Self-Discovery, which really gets into this on a much deeper level. And I started training with him and looking at how everything is in balance in masculine and feminine. And we all have it inside us. And that's when everything clicked. And I was like, this is really what's missing in a lot of these relationships. Men are, and especially at this point because of this whole toxic masculinity, men have been either afraid to step into their masculine, show their masculine, really build their masculine because we've been told for so long that it's wrong. Well, what's wrong is the limiting masculine. The empowered masculine is what we've been waiting for. Mm-hmm. And when men show up in that and then support it with their ideal feminine, the loving, the compassion, the caring, the playfulness, all of those things, that makes that attractive male to women. And that's what I really found. And that's how I kind of got into this more and more and more. And the deeper I looked at it, the more sense it made.
Yeah, no, it makes a great deal of sense. And, you know, it reminds me, like, when women will talk about oftentimes when they fell in love with their partner, it's really very often it's around that sensitive moment where they felt their nurturing and caring because they had a cold and he brought them soup over. Or they saw them playing with a child and saw that very, you know, sensitive feminine side, if you will, that balanced the hard-edged masculinity. And that would be the defining moment. That would sort of be, well, you're so thoughtful, you're so sensitive to those around you, you're so tender. And that became what, you know, would sort of shift their feelings and energies in a whole new direction.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, because I always say to men, look, you know, you can, it's, and this I got from Rob James. This was a great thing that he said to me a few years ago. He said, you can train any man to be a warrior, but training a man to be a lover is difficult.
Well said.
Naturally, yeah, it was beautiful. It was one of those aha moments for me, because, you know, men, we want to unleash that warrior. It's easy to say to a guy, go crazy, go be a man, go berserk, shoot guns, go hunting, climb a mountain, whatever you want to do. But to say now be sensitive and caring towards a woman, for a lot of men, it's awkward and difficult. So that balance, having both. And so I say to men, look, if you're just the masculine, if you only show up in a relationship as pure masculine, even if it's ideal masculine, it's very one-sided. They don't see that other side of you, and it's not attractive itself either.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to have that feminine side that she sees. And so I agree with you 100%. That's when the aha moment happens, where it's, you know, they go, oh, my God, he's this amazing masculine man, but he has this side that he shows me.
Right, right.
That softer side.
So how does that carry over and translate into their relationships with their girlfriends, their wives, their children?
In a big, big way. Because, again, this is one of the things I hear from women all the time, especially with the indecisiveness. Now, like, masculine limitations, I said, you know, bully, controlling, violent. Those are obvious things that cause problems in relationships. But when you get into indecisive, weak, possessive, immature, those kind of things, that really what I'm finding now, a lot of men are showing up in this, and it's, you know, the man child. They become these man children in relationships, and a lot of times they look to the wife as more of a mommy than a wife. And the wife feels like more of a mommy because now she has this immature male who, on the masculine limiting side, is, you know, weak and indecisive and entitled and immature.
And dependent. Independent.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing. That's on the limiting feminine side. That needy, that dependent, that, you know, attention-seeking, you know, the clingy, all those things. And she sees this guy as just another mouth to feed, because she's got to take care of him. And I hear that from a lot of women.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, I wish my husband would just, you hear this a lot, just grow up.
Right.
What they're really saying is, I really wish he would just be
a man.
A masculine man.
Yeah.
Just be a man. Show up as a man. Because women are attracted to men, right? That's in a man-woman relationship, she's attracted to a man, not a boy. And so how this happens in a relationship is, she starts to see him as this immature little boy. He starts showing up as this little boy. And I mean, I see it all the time. I see men walking around town in, you know, cargo shorts and backwards baseball caps at 40 years old. And it's like, okay, sir, you are now a grown man. You don't need to, you know, they're even dressing as young boys. And the thing I get from a lot of women is, you know, they feel like a mommy to their husband.
Right.
And that's not very attractive, and it doesn't make her. Now, women have this unbelievable, beautiful, divine sexual goddess inside all of them.
Mm-hmm. Those are beautiful. Well said.
Those are really beautiful, ideal, feminine qualities that women have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a woman is not going to show up as that beautiful, sensual, divine goddess to a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to show up like that to a man, to a hero, to a warrior, to a leader, to someone who's, you know, committed to her, is a protector and a guardian for her. That's what she wants to, you know, to be with. So when we don't, as men, show up in that, in our ideal empowered masculine, it's just not attractive. And it starts to shut down the intimacy. And I find that with the couples that I speak to and the men that I work with and women that I've interviewed, is that really becomes the key. They just feel like he's a little boy, I'm his mommy. There's nothing sexually exciting there.
Right. And, you know, what goes along with that, you're so right, is the piling up of responsibilities that falls into the, quote, mommy, the woman's lap. And so in addition to getting turned off because they see an adolescent, or I will hear the women say, I have three children now, or I have two children now, you know, because instead of having a partner who's helping with the responsibilities and managing, they have another kid who's looking to be taken care of. And so they wind up really angry and resentful, and that will certainly put a damper on, if not completely kill, whatever kind of passion and turn on would be there.
Oh, exactly. It just it annihilates it completely. And, you know, it's interesting because you said something about the woman says, you know, she's got another mouth to feed, which I agree with. And here's the other thing that it does. Women are amazing, amazing creatures. If there is
well
no
said.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If there is no masculine in the picture, they will step into their masculine.
That's true.
To fill that void.
That is true.
They will do that out of need and necessity, and they will absolutely step into their masculine need to be. Like, you know, single mothers do this. I was raised by a single mother, and I saw it when I look back on my upbringing, what my mom was trying to do with us, and I see it in single moms that I'm friends with now and what they're trying to do. So the women in those relationships, because the man isn't stepping into his empowered masculine, his right order masculine, she then has to take on that role. In addition to being his mommy, she's now the masculine in the household, taking on those responsibilities, protecting the children, in a lot of cases, even providing, you know, going out, getting a job. Many of these cases, I hear women are earning more than the husband in the relationship, and that causes that kind of role reversal. They're taking care of the kids. They're doing the decisions. They're taking care of all of these things that they're waiting for him to step up and do.
Right.
That causes a tremendous amount of resentment as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, the worst part is then when these women do decide to enough is enough and let me get out of this marriage, they have assumed so much of the, you know, the masculine role, if you will, in the relationship, that they wind up paying alimony, you know, and having to continue to be the caretaker and taking care of a guy who continues to be reliant and not really self-sufficient.
Right. And the other thing, and I'm going to add on to that because I agree with you, the other thing that I find when I talk to a lot of them too is they come to expect that this is how all men are showing up.
Mm, interesting.
It becomes very difficult for them because they're expecting that, oh, God, all men. And we're seeing it, you know, in society as a whole right now with this whole toxic masculinity. Well, these very powerful, well-known men were doing this. Thereby, all men must be doing this. Somewhere, all men have this tendency. Well, I'm going to agree and say, yes, we do. But there are men who know that the ideal is where they need to stay. And they don't go stepping into their, going down that path.
Absolutely. Well, that is not a path that is particularly appealing to the women to see the men going down, but we're going to go down the path of a commercial break, so stay with us because we'll be back in just a minute at the Let's Talk Sex show here at HealthyLife.net.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Let's Talk Sex Show here at HealthyLife.net. I'm Dr. Jane Greer talking with my guest, who is author Eric Rogel. You can find more from him on Twitter at Eric Rogel, R-O-G-E-L-L. And, yeah, no dot com, at Twitter. There we go. Okay, I'm looking for the dot com. I'm about to say it.
Just Twitter.
You can reach him directly. So let's talk about some examples of how having that right order masculine in play can help men in their workplace, in their career. How have you seen it come to life?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, we can even look at the negative side of it and see how it's just devastated a lot of men from being in the limiting part of this in their workplace, right? Because these big, powerful men have shown up in this limiting masculine of being, you know, controlling, abusive, overpowering, entitled, where they believe that they're, you know, entitled to take what they want. All of those disrespectful, it goes down the line. When you look at a man in the workplace in his right order masculine, or anyone, let's just, we can even say women showing up. I get a lot of this from women who are like, look, I'm the boss in my place, and I don't want to show up as being the bitch, right? That's one of the big things women always say to me. I want to do this. I want to be a leader, but I don't want to be bitchy. So when you look at these ideals, and we can pick out some that would be great for leaders to have, right order masculine ideals for leaders to have in a business world, in the workplace, would be things like a leader, visionary, so having that vision, dynamic and decisive, determined, a guardian, committed, steward is a good one, someone who guides others, mentoring. And then when you look at following that with the ideal feminine, you have that, you know, wisdom and wise is a big feminine ideal, being wise, supportive, empathetic, generous, intuitive, creative, and allowing. And allowing is a big one. That's where we let people kind of do their thing. So let's kind of take a look at this in terms of how it works for a business leader. So let's just say I'm a manager in, I have a group and I have a team. Now, if I go to my team and I'm like, you're going to do it this way, and this is my way, and I want to see it on my desk tomorrow, and you're going to work through the night, and I don't care, blah, blah, blah. That's all coming limited masculine, right? Does it feel like limiting masculine? It feels like that overbearing, controlling, dominating. But when you come from working with a team, and it's like, okay, here's the decision that I made. This is the direction that I would like to go. I've decided that, you know, you and you and you are going to work on this part of the project, and you and you and you are going to work on that part of the project. All right, and this is kind of how I see it. Now, I will give you all the support and everything that you need. I will make sure you have all the materials that you need. I'm here if you have any questions, and I want you to be as creative as you want. You can bounce any ideas off of me, and we'll get this thing done. Mm-hmm. And then the allowing comes in where I'm going to let you do your job and not micromanage.
Mm-hmm.
And give you the empowerment to go do and be successful on your own. That would be an example of the right order, masculine and feminine, coming into play in a business place.
Terrific.
Leading with that powerful masculine, supporting with the powerful feminine. And again, this works really well for women in the business place because they can bring that amazing, you know, empowering feminine into how they're leading their team.
And so let's lead this right into the bedroom and how this impacts in terms of sexual intimacy. Let's go right from the boardroom to the bedroom. But truly, with both people being in a relationship, being honest and consenting and in a loving relationship, not in the relationships we've been hearing about in the media in terms of, you know, where you're supposed to be in the boardroom and you're winding up in the bedroom. But in terms of intimacy, how does the man bring that right masculine and the woman bring the right feminine? How does that play out?
Sure. You know, what's interesting about it is from my experience and from also finding from interviewing a lot of people and all this, when the man shows up in his right order masculine and is really right order masculine, the women's empowered feminine just flows. It's just natural. There's really nothing that she needs to do. It just becomes like, oh my God, that's what I've been looking for. I can feel comfortable and go. And one of the things I tell men is, in that intimacy, in that bedroom, command is really the key. When you're in command and you're commanding, so in other words, a big complaint I get from women is men coming and going, well, what do you want to do? Or should I do this? Or, you know, maybe do you want... That's that indecisive, that weak showing up. But the women that I've spoken to and the men that I've spoken to that have had success with this, when they're in command and they just go and go for it and take it and lead and let their primal male come out, that becomes incredibly attractive to women in the bedroom. And she will then feel comfortable releasing that divine sexual goddess inside of her. So you want to talk about the masculine and feminine and the male in that. The beginning part of the masculine is the command, lead, primal, let that animal come out. And then on the feminine side, it's that allowing and that supportive. Because when a woman feels comfortable releasing or unleashing her own sexuality and knows that the man is not going to be judgmental or afraid or weak about it in any way, she feels comfortable unleashing her full sexuality, it's an amazing, amazing experience. So I always say to men, when you show up, when you take command, when you are that masculine first, and then allow her to be, you know, show her that you are supportive and loving and it's okay and you allow her, that's where the magic happens.
So whether we're talking about the workplace, the boardroom, or the play place, the bedroom, it sounds like what you have found is that the right balance facilitates the man being able to make the woman comfortable enough to be authentic and bring all the qualities that she possesses, her strengths as well as her vulnerabilities, her male and her female, into the interaction. And if it's in the workplace, the same thing, like giving people the sanctity and the safety with the respect to be their best selves without bombarding them and being aggressive, but being authoritative and supportive with that feminine quality, you know, that feminine self, so that people feel comfortable enough to take risks and to put out what they're good, so to speak, you know, and what they've got.
Exactly. It's that comfort level, you know, on two levels. On the masculine level, the comfort is, I know this person has my back. I know they're going to protect me. And on the feminine side, it's that supportive, that nurturing. I know they're going to be there if I need them. When you come with both of those, like you said, in any situation, workplace, personal relationships, bedroom, wherever it is, the other people that are around you can feel that. I mean, we know this when we feel it from someone. And it's authentic, like you said, and that's what really gives us the comfort to go, all right, this is a person that I can be around. I trust them.
Right.
It's attractive. It's comfortable. It's all of those things.
So before we run out of time, is it fair to say that men not living in the right order masculine way that you're talking about with this balance, and because part of this balance is an awareness of and an empathy for and a respect and a valuing of women. And without it, there's the flip of that is the devaluing, the disrespect, and that's kind of what we've been seeing so many women describing, how they've been, you know, treated, the sexual predatory behavior. Is that why we're seeing so many men falling from grace with all these accusations of sexual abuse?
Absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of these men, and I bring it back to the, you know, the one of the big masculine limitations is entitlement. You owe me. This is mine. You know, I get this. Whether or not you agree, I'm entitled to this. And when some of these weaker men get in positions of power and authority, because remember that all, you know, they always say, like, what is it? Money just amplifies who you are. The more money you have, the more of whatever it was you were shows up. So if you were always an asshole, more money makes you more of an asshole.
Right.
If you were a really good person, more money makes you. So I think it's the same thing in this when you get the more power. So to begin with. And then they get into the positions of power, and it makes them even more of what they were, more entitled, more of a bully, because they feel untouchable.
Interesting.
And that's where we are. That's what I'm saying. The right order, getting into the right order is the solution.
Makes all the difference. Well, thank you for being here and touching us on a very intellectual as well as heart level with all this heartening and insightful information. It was such a pleasure to have you, and thank you for being here.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I really appreciate you having me. Thanks.
Absolutely. And listeners, be sure to follow Eric on Twitter at Eric Rogell, E-R-I-C-R-O-G-E-L-L. And when we come back, Rebecca Rosenblatt, a.k.a. Dr. Date, will be joining us. Stay with us. You're listening to the Let's Talk Sex Show at HealthyLife.net.
Lighting the way with positive energy and love. HRNRadio.com.
I'm Dr. Jane Greer, and my next guest is my favorite, Rebecca Rosenblatt, who's been with us. She's Dr. Date. She's a registered psychotherapist, certified addiction trauma counselor, sex therapist, and life coach, critically acclaimed as one of Canada's leading relationship and sexuality experts. Rebecca has reached millions as the host of 6 TV shows and 2 radio shows with over 1,000 on-air hours, author of 7 books, including Overcoming Betrayal, and hundreds of advice columns and articles, as well as being a workshop leader and keynote speaker at hundreds of events. Now, if you can keep up with her, as if that's not enough, she's also a clinical associate and private practitioner in the Toronto area, dedicated to helping individuals and couples heal and grow. Together, we talk about what's happening behind closed doors in the United States, Canada, and your bedroom. It's always such a pleasure to have you. Thank you for joining us.
I'm always honored and so excited to be speaking with you, so thank you.
It's so great because you are just a continual, steady, constant fountain of wealth of information, and we're going to use that info to go straight to the mailbag and go for the first question, which is, my 17-year-old son's been dating a girl, and her birthday was last week. He forgot. He trivialized her birthday and said he had plans with friends that weekend, so it would have to wait. She slapped him across the cheek and stormed off. Well, needless to say, he has a lot to learn about women. So she's asking, how can a woman explain that these types of what he's calling little things are important? So that doesn't happen.
Her response, I think it speaks volumes, but she's very, very upset. I think to the male listeners out there, when a woman is even remotely upset or she's bringing something up, which means she is upset, the most important thing is acknowledgement and validation. It doesn't matter if birthdays aren't a big deal to you, but if it has hurt her, these are her feelings you're talking about, don't toy with them. So to guys out there, seriously, if you can acknowledge and validate, it's just like a pressure cooker. The steam comes out and you're calmer. And most women will say, okay, you get it, so I'm glad that at least you get it. And she won't be as upset and certainly not slap you across the face.
Right. It's really true. Some people really place no premium on special occasions, particularly birthdays. They're like, you know, whether they've had their own experience growing up that it was not fussed over or people didn't make a big to-do about it or they're uncomfortable because they're getting older, they just don't place a priority on their own birthday, and so they tend to behave that way with other people's birthdays as well. And they wind up unwittingly really causing hurt and disappointment and anger in their partners because their partner's like, how could you forget my birthday?
I always say look at whether or not birthdays are a big deal in their family, because that's where we learn our traditions and core values and what's important, what isn't. So if, same with public displays of affection, if your partner is coming from a family that doesn't do PDAs, so if they don't do them with you, they're not being cruel, they just don't know any better. If their family didn't make a big fuss over birthdays and they don't make it over you, don't take it personally, still let them know that it's important to you and you would appreciate it in the future because it is important to you. But don't take it personally because it means that maybe their family didn't do it. Now, if they're acting differently from what they grew up with, then that's a slightly different story.
Right, that's a different story. I love what you're saying, which is to really acknowledge the differences and don't take it personally. First of all, I love what you're saying, which is give a heads up. My birthday's coming up. What are you getting me? Or I'm really looking forward to my present. Let your partner know that you really value your birthday and it's important to you and you're going to be expecting a card and a present. I mean, I hear people just so upset that their partners didn't even get them a card. And I will say, just as you're suggesting, well, do they know? He should know. Well, yeah, he should. But again, if he's coming from a family background where, no, cards were not given and presents were not important, then he won't know, and you don't want to be disappointed, so you want to make sure that you're taking that step to take care of yourself. People will say, well, why do I have to take care of him? And I'll say, just like you're suggesting, no, you're taking care of yourself. Right, and the not taking it personally. Now, when that is done, it's pretty hard because birthdays are probably the most personal day you can get to. You know, we can say, well, they're in a bad mood, don't take it personally. But so how do you not take it personally? If it is your birthday, what's the best way to broach it with your partner? You know, is a gut reaction like slapping them across the face okay if you're that hurt, or is that not okay? And talk about
it. It's like two wrongs making a right. I don't think, physical expression of anger or losing it and feeling justified is ever okay. I don't think that's okay under any circumstances. I don't know if you remember this older movie, Good Will Hunting, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You remember the scene where Mimi Driver, her birthday is forgotten by her partner, and she says, it was my birthday. He goes, and? And she says, you didn't do anything. And he goes, well, what did you want me to do? She says, dinner would have been nice. He says, why didn't you just tell me you wanted to go to dinner? And so she says, well, then it wouldn't be the same. He says, and now you didn't go for dinner and you're upset. At least if you told me, we would have gone for dinner. I would have upset that you had to suggest it. So there's a lot of wisdom in that. So it's about teaching your partner. I know my first birthday with my husband, he didn't know. And I thought, you know what? I kept waiting all day. Oh, he's ignoring it because there's going to be a big surprise party because it fell on a Saturday, no less. There's going to be a huge surprise pending. But Saturday came and went and nothing happened. And I had to kind of step back and say, okay, well, they don't do birthdays in their household. So it's something I'm going to have to teach him without taking it personally. And it does count. If you've told him and he does it, it does count because he still doesn't have to. But he cares enough that when you tell him, he follows instructions. But if he still doesn't, well, then that's definitely a different story. But teach him. And if he does it still, that means that you are important to him. So it may not even be important to him, but he's doing it for you. So in my books, that counts for even more.
Absolutely. And, you know, it reminds me what you're describing, Rebecca. So many times a patient will say to me, if particularly when it comes to sex, if I say, well, you know, well, tell him what you like or show him what you like, why do I have to tell him? Why should I have to show him? Then it takes away from him knowing what to do or how to please me. And I will say, because if you don't tell him and you don't show him, he will not know and you will not be pleased. And, you know, and then I often will say, listen, infants do not have the power of words and language, so they have to cry or they have to pout or they have to scream or they have to get upset to let their mummies know that their needs are not being met. But we as adults have the power of words, and we can say, this is what I need, this is, and guide our partners to be able to meet our needs so that everybody feels good and it's a win-win. But on that note, we're going to take a break. We're going to both win-win here, and we'll be back in just a minute at the Let's Talk Sex Show at HealthyLife.net.
Give yourself some love with our self-care programs at HRNradio.com.
Welcome back to the Let's Talk Sex Show at HealthyLife.net. My guest is my favorite, Rebecca Rosenblatt, a.k.a. Dr. Date. You can find more from her on Twitter at TalkWithRebecca or her website, www.talkwithrebecca.com. And before we move on to our next question, you and I were talking during the break about, well, you know, how do you speak up and let your partner know what you like as opposed to being afraid and then just the movie where Matt Damon was saying, well, just tell me, you'd have something rather than having nothing and being upset. So what's the best way to go about it?
So are you talking about in the bedroom?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. In the bedroom, it's always about, I love that you do this, I love that you do that, and I'd maybe like us to try this, or I'd like more of this. So obviously, you want to put it in a context where you're saying that I do enjoy you, I'm not so disappointed or bored in you that I'm trying to replace something. I just want to add something. So it should always be, the request should always be made as an ask for something additional as opposed to just coming out of the blue, because otherwise it feels like what you're doing is no good and we're fragile in our sexuality. So that's a very simple, straightforward, I love what you do here, and I would love to try this, or I'd like more of this, and that's it, in and out. That's it, no pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended, but that is perfect because that is right to the point. The worst thing you can do is say what you don't like or what you don't want and be critical, because your partner will just become gun shy and back up, and it could really, you know, throw a monkey wrench into your sex life. But just like you're saying, state the positive and look to add on. So we're going to add on now with our next question, which is, I'm 43 years old. I've been engaged for 6 months. I'm worried about marriage because what if I'm unhappy? What if I'd be happy or single forever? What if we get divorced? I'm having doubts, not about her, but about marriage in general. So here's a guy who's waiting to get, you know, who waited to get till he was older to get engaged. And clearly, he's been used to his single lifestyle, so it feels like an even bigger loss. And he's got a lot of fears about what he's going to give up and what the gain is. So how common are these kinds of doubts, and what do you suggest?
Well, when it's an older person, indeed, they've gotten used to their freedom, their routines, their way of doing things. So the very first thing I would do is have a switch in the mindset of what could go right as opposed to what could go wrong, and then look at what do I want, and will this decision help me get closer to what I want? So maybe it's having a partner, maybe it's having companionship, maybe it's having someone to share things with or have someone be a witness to your life. And will this relationship provide that? The worst thing you can do is do a pros and cons list, because when you do that, every time you run into an issue, which every relationship will, people start looking at the cons. Same thing with if you're comparing person A to person B. You know when people do those lists?
Right.
Whenever person A screws up, if you went with them, you're going to think about, oh, person B could have brought this, but you're going to forget that the reason you chose person A. So the fact that after all this time he's willing to tie the knot, it tells me this person is special. This person is different from what he's had before, or maybe he's in a different stage in life. So I would strongly recommend just focus on what made you do something different this time around. What do you want in life, especially as you're growing older? What do you want in life, and how will this person help you get there? And if they will help you get there, just go, I've hit the relationship lottery jackpot, and I'm so happy, and I'm going to focus on what could go right as opposed to what could go wrong. Because if you do that, then your narrative is such that your lens is what could go wrong, and that's all you notice. It's like if you decide to buy a Prius, everywhere you look, you see Priuses. Once you buy it, you don't see that car that much anymore, because what we focus on is all that we see. So if his lens is what could go wrong, then that's all he's going to see, and he might miss what could go right. So I would strongly say, what made you make that decision after all these years? Focus on that.
Beautifully stated and sage advice, and you know, really, really helpful in terms of look for what you're gaining and what you have rather than what you think you're missing out on and what you're going to lose. So now, is there a way that somebody can sort of take a litmus test on themselves to gauge whether they would be happier to remain single or to get married? In other words, just in terms of a quality of life, is there a way to say, well, you know, I'm really, I like to be off on my own. I don't like to be accountable. I don't want to share. I mean, or is that, are those things that change if, as you're saying, you meet that someone special who makes you willing and ready to make those kinds of compromises?
So it's that tug of war between wanting independence and between wanting connection. So I have my clients take a big piece of paper, put 100 items if you want of what you would like, what makes you happy, and then you have to reduce it to 10 items. So, you know, if it's, I have to choose between A and B, this one goes, this one stays. You bring it down to 10 things. And that's your core needs. That's what is really important to you, because you brought it down from 100. I don't care if you start with 500, but you brought it down to your core needs. And then you see how this person is going to, are they going to enhance your core needs, or is there deal breakers written all over it? And also, just kind of thinking, just because I wanted something in the first stage of my life, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to serve the second or the third stage in my life. There are couples who have said, we don't want to have kids because we want to be able to go a drop of a hat, travel, or be able to make love on the kitchen table. And I asked them, when was the last time you made love on the kitchen table? Never. Ran off to travel at the drop of a hat? Never. We have to plan. We've got busy careers. We can't do that. So the very reasons that you don't want to have kids, they're not really reasons, because that's just what you're telling yourself. So it's just trying to see, what do I need? What are my core values? Will this step help me get closer or farther away? And the things that I'm afraid of, okay, freedom, what does that look like? Does that mean my freedom to just go run, do whatever I want? Well, when was the last time I did that? How much fun was it? Is my freedom about dating multiple people? Well, have I done that? How much fun was that? How often did I do it? How meaningful was it? So try to see what freedom means to him. List it out and say, when was the last time that it brought meaning into my life, or I even did it for that matter? And you might be surprised that the stuff you're holding on to is insignificant at this point.
You know, it's so true. It's like holding on to a coat or a dress or a pair of pants, and they were like your favorite or you love it and you think it's great, but then when you try it on, you find that it's too small, it's too big, it's completely not in style, and you go, my God, why was I holding on to this? Because there was an attachment to it that no longer exactly what you're saying fits the person that you are in the here and now. I think your advice in terms of being aware and making the list, not the pros and the cons and not the person A to person B, but the what are my needs, what do I need, what am I looking for, is so significant and so powerful, because by doing that, it puts you in control of securing for yourself what's important, as opposed to trying to be judge and jury over other people and evaluate what they have or what they don't have. It's more a matter of what do I need and how do I feel when I'm with this person. I remember saying that to one of my patients. She was like out on a date with this guy, and she went out with him a couple of times, and she said, well, I don't know. He seems, and she started listing all the qualities about him, and I said to her, well, how do you feel with him? How does he make you feel about yourself?
Yeah.
And she was like, wow. She said, I feel good. I feel important. I feel respected. I said, well, that's your barometer. Pay attention to that. On that note, we're going to pay attention to a commercial break. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute at the Let's Talk Sex Show here at HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net. Millions of listeners know the secret. Now you do, too. Positive talk 24 hours a day, every day.
Well, as always, Rebecca, I want to thank you for such an insightful and wise and clarifying conversation on relationships and sex, sexuality. It's always such a delight to have you here with us.
Thank you so much. I always learn and have so much fun with you.
Thank you. And right back at you. And that is it for today. Join me next week for a special encore episode. Stay in touch with me off the air at my Facebook page and on Twitter at Dr. Jane Greer. And thanks for listening, everyone. Remember, you can always get what you want when you're in the know.